now at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
And the Garden Hotline number to ask your question today is 314-436-7900. We do have an 800 number. You have to dial the 1-800-925-1120. Again, the local number, 314-436-7900. And guess what? We're talking trees. We're talking trees today with Mark Gruber, community forester from the Missouri Department of Conservation. He's been on the program one time before, and we had lots of calls when you were on before, Mark.
Yep, absolutely. It was great.
Yeah, there are trees everywhere.
Absolutely.
It's actually the time of year when the trees are changing so much. Give me a little sense of your, love of fall and when the leaves change.
Sure, yeah. No, it is definitely my favorite time of year because I am not a summertime guy living in St. Louis for most of my life. But it's not going to be the greatest fall color experience this year just because of the extended drought that we've had. But the thing is a lot of times you'll find some really pleasant surprises, even despite the fact that it's just so dry out there. You'll still get some decent color change out of trees. So expect to see pockets of really nice views. But overall, it's going to be a bit dull just because of how bad the drought was.
I mean, is this the weekend? Is this the peak?
That's one of the most common questions I get. To me, fall color is more a series of pulses, if you will. To me, it's rare that we get one weekend of spectacular brilliance. This isn't going to be a bad weekend, to hit it because you're starting to get the early fall color species are still hanging on, and the later fall color species like oaks and hickories are starting to really go through their color change now. So when those overlap nicely, then you kind of get that peak that everybody thinks of. But a lot of times it's like, okay, we get early fall color and then kind of the mid fall color and the late stages of fall color. I just don't think there's going to be much of the late fall color. I think that's going to be a little disappointing.
And that's primarily because of not having enough rain?
Yeah. The drought conditions and, should we get a couple more hard freezes, that tends to put a pretty quick end to things color-wise.
Can you explain, I know this sounds like a silly question, but can you explain the reason that the leaves fall off trees
sure,
in the fall?
Yeah. And no, absolutely.
Go bare in the winter and then come back in the spring?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna get all science-y and nerd out on you.
But, okay, that's fine.
essentially what happens is the tree is part of its energy production process, which we all learned was photosynthesis, right? It needs a certain amount of sunlight to benefit the tree. And once it gets to the point, once the tree gets to the point where it costs more energy than it can actually produce, because it's got to move it, through the tree to storage, and it costs energy to move energy. So once it gets to the point where it's just not efficient, it shuts off. It basically just closes off the tissue that provides a support to the leaf. And that begins the stages of fall color. So you'll hit that short day length, and plants that are deciduous, meaning they lose their leaves in the fall, sense that and then just shut their leaves off. And as that green pigment breaks down, that's where you get the yellows and oranges because they're always there. They're just masked. But the reds and purples are produced by energy that then gets trapped in the leaf after that tissue forms to cut it off. And that's where you get those reds and purples.
Wow. I'm going to take back what I said. That was not a silly question. It was a good question.
No, it's a great question.
It's an interesting,
really.
That was a great explanation of it. So, yeah, because people just see the leaves, but to know why the trees are doing that, Jim Gaffigan, the comedian, calls it the leaves hospice.
Yes. Yep, I like that.
Yeah. Last time on the show when you were here, we had a lot of questions about Japanese maples.
Yes.
There's always seems to be one topic. I don't know what it's going to be this time, but if you have a question about a tree in your yard or wherever, 314-436-7900, what exactly does a community forester do?
That's a very common question as well. So mostly I do work with communities in and around not only the city of St. Louis, but I cover mostly the south and western portions of our St. Louis region. I go north somewhat as well. But most of the time we're offering technical assistance and financial assistance to communities to help them manage the trees on public properties. So trees in parks, along city rights of way and boulevards and things like that. And you wouldn't think, you know, I'm sure most people are thinking, what's it take to manage a tree? Well, in public spaces, a lot, actually, because most of it's centered around public safety. Trees are great. We love them. I love them, obviously, as a forester, but they can be dangerous given certain conditions. And when neglected, like anything, it's going to not do as well. It's going to start to break down, meaning that you're going to have dead limbs up in a tree or things that are broken by storms. And then you need to address those situations. Otherwise, somebody can get hurt or buildings can be damaged, things like that. So a lot of it's centered around public safety, like I said. But then we also realize that trees provide a huge amount of benefits. Stormwater abatement, honestly, is one of the highest financial returns, if you want to put it that way, to put on a tree. Because trees, when they have their leaves on, can intercept about 50 to 75% of a rainfall event. And that keeps it out of our stormwater sewers. And that's huge. That's a big cost savings. So
do you do like education programs for people?
I do. It's not a primary focus of my job, but when asked, yeah, about things, yeah, sure, absolutely. And we teach other professionals. We train arborists that are trying to become certified through an International Society of Arboriculture, which is a professional organization for arborists. So quite a bit.
All right. Well, let's start with the questions from you. It's 314-436-7900. Bill, you're up first on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, I'm curious about watering of trees and woody shrubs and so forth. Now, once the deciduous ones lose their leaves, do they need water anymore in the season?
They actually do, especially in times where we have these really, really prolonged series of dry spells. You definitely want to keep watering even after, you know, maybe we get some freezing temperatures and things like that. Obviously you don't want to necessarily leave your hose connected to your house. We don't want to freeze anybody's water lines, but, you know, when we're going 10 days, 2 weeks without any moisture, even large mature trees will benefit from a drink. So a slow trickle from a hose, I oftentimes just leave mine at a real slow drip, and let it run overnight, if it's warm enough to do so. But yeah, definitely. And if you have any broadleaf evergreens, at all, you definitely want to give those water because they're going to suffer the most.
Yeah. Evergreens are still active, I guess, right?
Yeah. And deciduous trees are too, they're still losing water through some of their bark and, you know, twig tissues and things like that. Obviously not as much as when they have leaves on, but they are still losing water and those tissues can become desiccated and you can see damage.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call, Bill. We're off and running. 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. Our guest today is Mark Gruber, community forester with the Missouri Department of Conservation. He'll continue taking your phone calls in just a moment.
In the know, on the go. Trust KMOX for local news that impacts St. Louis and the region. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
You are tuned in to the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Our expert today is Mark Gruber. He is a community forester from the Missouri Department of Conservation. He loves to talk about trees, and he knows a lot about them. In fact, during the break, the topic came up, forest bathing. I've never heard this term before, but there's a forest bathing event today in Godfrey, Illinois.
Yep.
What is forest bathing?
I'm of the older generation, so for me, it was hanging out in the woods. but that's kind of the shortened definition of it, I would say. Usually there's some, you know, there's it, an interpretive person that's doing some guiding, and we'll talk about the interactions with nature and things like that. And then also just, you know, go through relaxation techniques. But, you know, when I was young and running around in the woods near my house, it was just hanging out in the woods, you know?
Yeah. They've come up with a new name for it.
Absolutely.
Basically nature therapy. It sounds good, though.
Sure.
The phone number is 314-436-7900 to ask your question of Mark. Jack, you are on the Garden Hotline.
Hey, me?
Yep, you're up.
Oh, two questions. One is, are we in the right region for sumac? That's number one. And number two is, I know it's an understory tree. Where can you get it?
Okay. Yeah, there are several kinds of sumac that grow naturally all around the woods and along the sides of the highways. They're usually what color up a really pretty red color this time of year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's a lower growing one that's called fragrant sumac. I usually call it stinking sumac because if you bruise the leaves a little bit, to me, the odor's a bit disagreeable. Other people like it, so, you know, it's up to you.
I know there's a poison sumac.
Yeah, and that word gets thrown around for a lot of different plants. But the interesting thing is that poison ivy, which most everybody is familiar with, is actually a type of sumac. So a lot of times that's where that term comes from. And that fragrant sumac that I talked about looks very similar as far as its leaves are concerned to poison ivy. It grows as a shrub rather than a vine, but poison ivy can also grow as a shrub as well. Uh-huh. So it can be confused. And it's reported that some people that are highly allergic to poison ivy can actually be affected somewhat by sumacs. But there's a variety out there in the trade that's really common that you can find at most any garden center that's called Grolo sumac. And that's a type of fragrant sumac. Doesn't get very tall. It stays down about 18 inches to 2 feet, I would say, and then kind of spreads out along the ground. So it's nice. You'll see it planted in like highway medians and things like that, pretty common around town. But it's going to have a great red fall color, and it really tolerates some poor sight. So that's a really common one that you can find in the nurseries.
Yeah, and that's it's an understory kind of tree or bush.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I you know, Frank Lloyd Wright was very fond.
Mm-hmm.
Very fond of sumac.
Okay.
So
it's a great plant. It's a great plant. It looks very nice visually, like I said, in the fall especially, but it stays green and would tolerate this drought, so it'd be a good one for
Roger House.
Especially this
time of year, it gets really red leaves.
Yep, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, or crimson, if you're into that.
You bet.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for the thank you for the question, Jack. Interesting topic. I was just kind of Googling around here about sumac. Found that, in the Middle East, they use it as a spice.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
And it has that red color.
Absolutely.
It's sort of like cumin-ish.
Yeah.
I also did not know that sumac is a member of the cashew family.
It is. It is.
So it's
absolutely
like a
is.
Nut?
Yes, kind of. Sometimes you feel like a nut, right?
Sometimes you don't.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, it absolutely is. And there, like I said, there are several types and some taller shrubs. The taller shrubs, you can actually make a tea out of the flowers and the seeds, which some people say tastes a little bit like a combination of Arnold Palmer, I think, is iced tea and lemonade combination.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it tastes a little bit similar. So I've had it, but it's been a while, so I don't really remember what it tasted like. But
I love Arnold Palmer's.
Well, give it a go.
Give it a try. All right, the number is 314-436-7900. Mark Gruber is our guest, community forester, talking trees mainly, but plants also.
Sure, absolutely.
You just answered one. So your questions are welcome right now on the Garden Hotline. Mark, also, what do you do over the winter time?
mostly planning for what I'm going to be doing the rest of the year. We actually end up doing a lot of the same things, but something that I really, really enjoy is we do prescribed firework as an agency. So it's not something that I do personally a lot as part of my position, but I'm assisting other folks in doing that. And we do that to help manage some of the areas that we're in charge of. Because it was a natural thing that occurred through a lot of our forests and our prairies before European settlement came through, and then we really started getting nervous about having fire near our structures, which makes a lot of sense. But it's something that our woods really rely on in our prairies as well. So we use it as a good management tool.
So it's human intervention.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah, because Smokey the Bear did his job a little bit too well, and we removed it, you know, from a system that really relies on it. You see that a lot out west, and that's why we have some of the catastrophic wildfires that we do, because we've taken those naturally more low-intensity fires out of this system, which help remove some of those fuels that cause us problems.
We had Erin Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve on last week, and mm-hmm. she was talking about this, their time of year also to do the prescribed fires.
Absolutely.
Over the next couple of months. And it was fascinating to talk about the process, because you do have to be careful.
Yes.
Because you're playing with fire.
Yes, absolutely. Literally. Yes.
But it is necessary to, you know, I guess, control the overgrowth.
Yeah, I don't like using that term overgrowth, but it just because it creates, I think, a picture of something that isn't realistic, that isn't necessarily happening out there. There's something that we call a carrying capacity, which means the soil and the sunlight, the amount of moisture and nutrients that are out there, there's only so much. So plants are going to grow up to that level, and once they start to grow past it, that's when you see decline start to come in, because there's not enough to go around. The smorgasbord has, you know, lost its food. So you'll see that reaction in some of the plants. What fire does is not only returns a lot of those nutrients to the ground that are tied up in things like decaying twigs and leaves and things like that, it returns that. But it also allows a lot of seeds to actually break a dormancy. There are some that require fire to be able to actually sprout and grow. So you need that. Some plants need bare soil for that seed to fall on to be able to germinate. So you're creating seeding opportunities. You're thinning down the number of plants that are on that site naturally to help it flourish.
All right, let's go to our next question. Carrie, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a problem with oak leaf mites. Mm-hmm. I work out in the yard, and this time of year, I get bit up on my arms and my neck and my torso, and it's miserable. I would like to know if there's anything I can do to alleviate that.
I wish I had a really good answer for you, but unfortunately I don't. Getting the leaves up and off the ground will help you in future seasons, not necessarily the current one, but they may help reduce the amount of overwintering that you have in those itch mites. Again, it's not going to do anything immediately, but it will help you out in future seasons if you can rake those up and dispose of them.
So mulching them is not the answer. I need to get them out of here.
You can mulch them, just don't leave them underneath the tree, if that makes sense. So you can reuse them in other places, and you should be okay.
Okay. All right. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Carrie, for the question. Up next, let's go to Rick. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah. I have a question about the arch grounds. You know, several years ago, we had to replace all the ash borer trees or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And that made sense. Well, what did make sense to me is they replaced them with this one single species.
Yes.
Did that make sense?
I'm laughing because I was actually on a panel that worked with the National Park Service to discuss those very topics. There were some restrictions on what the National Park Service could do because of the original design of the grounds. Everything, the structures, the landscaping, everything was a design that as I understand it, the National Park Service really couldn't deviate from. And so they wanted a monoculture, basically, or the use of the same species up those walkways for its visual impact. The thing to understand about, you know, what seems to be a lack of diversity in there is don't get so fixated on just that one site. You have to consider everything that's around. So if we were, say, planting a whole lot more maple trees, and I'm not against maple trees, all I'm saying is that they get planted a lot. So we have a lot of them around the area. So if some sort of invasive pest would come in and affected maple, then we'd have a lot to lose, right? There'd be a lot of things that would be affected by that. So that's where diversity helps out. But the London plane tree that they replanted with is just not all that common. It is closely related to sycamore. We do have a fair number of those. But I wouldn't say that London plane tree by itself or you know, all throughout this area is super common and would cause us a problem. But you know, if there is an issue with that particular species, obviously the arch grounds is going to see a pretty heavy impact on those walkways.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Always wondered.
Yeah. Good question. Thanks for calling in, Rick. And by the by, today is the annual event where the people who built the arch go back to the arch and ask or answer questions from people. It's morning.
Oh, wow.
Literally at 10 o'clock. So, Rick, you're right on the money with that question. It's from 10 to noon in the lobby where the tram is, and they'll sign some posters, kids' activities taking place. But it is these guys are mostly in their 80s and 90s now. It's incredible.
I'll bet.
Great event, though, if you get a chance to check it out. All right, we will take your phone calls, 314-436-7900 with Mark Gruber, community forester, just a moment.
Podcast The Bernie Mickler Show today on the free Odyssey app and follow to receive Bernie's daily take on Cardinals, Blues, or whatever else is in the news. AUDACY.
I'm KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow. Happy to be joined once again this week by Mark Gruber, who is a community forester at the Missouri Department of Conservation. He has been on before answering your questions, mainly about trees, because that is his primary field of expertise. We have some phone calls lined up right now. Let's start with Michael. You're on the Garden Hotline. Go ahead, Michael.
Hi, good morning. Appreciate the time, gentlemen. A couple things that I was hoping Mark can expand on, just so people know they exist. First one's a George White nursery out in Licking, just to get some native trees to plant some saplings. And then the second one, which I've taken advantage of personally, is the Timber Management Assistance Program. Just great program, fascinating how you take inventory of the trees, and just hoping you can expand on those. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, happy to do it. Yeah, the George White Nursery, it's a great place to actually visit when they have an open house, so you can see how the nursery operation runs. It's fascinating how they produce those thousands and thousands of trees on an annual basis. But yeah, there's a lot of folks that don't know that they can go on our website and order trees from November through April. They'll come packaged as seedlings shipped directly to whatever address you want them for. There is a cost associated with it unless you're having some sort of public tree-related event. If you are and you would like to get some seedlings to be able to hand out to the public, say for an Arbor Day event or an Earth Day event or something like that, you can actually contact your local forester through the Department of Conservation, and we may be able to get those for you free of charge. The other thing would be the forest management services that we provide. So there are foresters assigned to every county in the state of Missouri, and we will actually come out and talk to you about the forested acreage on your property, help you manage it. A lot of times, especially in and around your major metropolitan areas, you're going to be dealing with various types of invasive species first. But yeah, we will help you manage your trees for whatever interests you have. So we're going to ask you what your objectives are for the property, whether, say, you like to hunt or bird watch or just recreate out there. We can help you with management guidance on your property. So just give your local office a call and they'll connect you with the local forester.
Good answer there, Mark.
Thanks.
Michael, thanks for the call. Bob, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yes. Yes. I live in Zone 6. I've got a redbud tree. It's about 10 foot tall, about 10, 11 years old. It's, I would say, in half bloom as we speak. Mm-hmm. I've never seen that before this time of year. Can you help me?
Yeah, you're not alone in that. There's a lot of trees that are doing some flowering, especially if they're spring flowering species, which most of them are. They're blooming again now. A lot of it has to do with our recent temperature fluctuations and the fact that we're remaining kind of warm, and then also the drought's kind of encouraging some of that flowering too, believe it or not. But it's all weather related. Your tree's going to be fine. It's not going to flower as spectacularly as it would have in the springtime, because they're flowering now and it won't have time to develop those flower buds before the spring season. But it won't really have a health impact on your tree.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call, Bob. The number is 314-436-7900. Mark Gruber is answering your questions today. He is a community forester. Kathy, you're up next on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Good morning. I have somewhat of a juvenile question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. 2 years ago, I have this very old oak tree in my backyard, and 2 years ago, we had so many acorns on it. It was just like raining acorns for 2 straight weeks. Mm-hmm. I had to wheelbarrow them out of the yard. There were so many. Mm-hmm. This year, I have next to zero.
Yep.
And I just wonder what causes 1 year to be so many and then the next year none.
Sure. Yeah, that actually happens a lot, believe it or not. And that's not a juvenile question at all. It's a great question. It happens somewhat naturally. Trees will go through natural flowering and then fruit production cycles. Obviously, you got to have flowers to produce fruit. And so you'll see seasonal ebbs and flows. So 1 year will be heavy, the next year will be light. But you also have to take into account the weather impacts on that. So even though it might be heading for, or scheduled for, if you want to put it that way, a heavier flower production season, if we don't have the right weather conditions, let's take oaks as an example, they're wind pollinated. And so if we have particularly wet springs, you won't see a lot of that yellow green dust everywhere that causes a lot of people, including me, to sneeze. You won't see that because the rains have basically washed that out of the air. And so you'll get less acorn production that year because that's what's pollinating those flowers and will result in acorns. So oaks, in particular, have pretty much seasonal ebbs and flows, like I said. Red oaks, there are two groups of oaks, a red oak and the white oak group. The red oak group actually takes 2 seasons to go from flower to acorn, while white oaks will do that in 1 season. So if you know that, you know, spring of last year was particularly rainy, then we're not going to have a good red oak acorn crop this fall. Whereas if it was particularly rainy this spring, then we wouldn't have a particularly good white oak acorn crop this fall. So that's where you'll see that variation in acorn production.
Okay, and the other question, same tree, I think, but the deck has recently just been really covered with this sticky substance.
Mm-hmm.
Is that from the oak tree?
Yeah, so a lot of folks will think that that's sap coming out of the tree. That's actually some insect feeding that's going on. We call that honeydew, actually. So it's probably either some late season aphids or some late season lace bug that might be feeding on the leaves. It's really not going to cause your tree any problems. because leaves are old. They've pretty much done everything they're going to do for the year. So it doesn't really have a health impact. It can just be annoying to have that sticky stuff all over your deck. Just wash it off and go about your business.
Well, I thought because we haven't had much rain, it wasn't naturally being washed off.
that would definitely have an impact as well, yes.
Okay, third question. Maybe you have the answer, maybe not. It has to do with moles. Are you a mole expert?
I have become at least more knowledgeable in moles because it's a very common question that I get asked.
Well, the question is, my lawn guy was talking, I noticed I have much more mole activity, and I was wondering if it had anything to do with the cicadas earlier in the season.
Not so much, although they'll feed on the larvae in the soil, so the grubs that you see in the soil, they do feed on those things, as well as plant roots and earthworms and things like that. But what you're probably not going to want to hear is that the nicer your yard is, the more likely you are to have moles. Whereas if you don't irrigate your turf grass like me, then I don't have as many mole problems because they're going to go somewhere where it's a lot easier for them to dig. Yeah, so that's something you might want to look into as well. I'm not saying, dry out your yard and let it burn up like I do mine. But, when you have a well-manicured yard, it tends to actually attract moles.
All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been helpful.
Good.
Thanks for calling in, Kathy. Good questions there. We're taking your question, 314-436-7900 for Community Forester Mark Gruber. We'll continue with those phone calls in just a moment on the Garden Hotline.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thanks for tuning in. We have your answers today with Mark Gruber, community forester from the Missouri Department of Conservation. The number is 314-436-7900. Let's go back to the phones now. Sarah, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Oh, yes, I have a couple of questions. The first one is, I've been watering my azalea and my lilac. How long do I keep doing this with the weather the way it is? That's my first question.
Starts to rain, actually. So, yeah, keep watering until we start getting some rain. Like we talked about, as they drop their leaves, there's going to be less water loss, but it doesn't go completely down to nothing. So if we don't happen to get these rainfall events that are predicted as we come up, you want to keep giving them a nice, slow, thorough drink of water about every 10 days to 2 weeks.
Wonderful. Okay, my second one is my rose garden has really been different this year than any other year, I think, due to all the changes in temperature, et cetera. But is now the time to stop cutting roses to, like, bring in and show and just let it go? Is it now is the time I should start letting it winterize?
Yeah.
What should I be doing now with roses?
Yeah, I would say you're probably getting to the point where you want to go ahead and just cut them back. I will preface all this by saying I am 100% not a rose expert. It's kind of a science in and of itself. But as I understand it, yeah, you want to go ahead. They may continue to produce some flowers as we stay warm, but I suspect we're probably ended for or going to head to a rather abrupt change in temperatures. So I think you're probably safest to go ahead and do your pruning back now.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Sarah. Up next, we have Joan. Good morning, Joan.
Well, this is Joan's husband instead.
Oh, okay.
Joan's husband. My wife wants to know when and how to trim hydrangeas.
Okay. Do you know what type of hydrangea we're talking about?
Limelight, okay. I think it is.
All right. Thanks, Joan, from the background. Again, kind of like with the rose question, you're okay to go ahead and prune those back now. I would say, it seems like it's going to stay warm for a little bit. And while you might get a little bit of sporadic flowering later into the season, I think we're headed for that abrupt temperature change. So I would go ahead and do your pruning back now.
And how far do you prune them back?
I'll give them about 6 to 12 inches of stem remaining.
OK, Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Let's go next to Tom. Tom, you are on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, I have a very large gumball tree, and I had one tree cut down recently, and the tree guy says, I can take care of the gumballs on your tree. There's an injection that costs $250, and if I hit it right at the right time, it'll eliminate the gumballs by 90 or 95%. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a possibility, and the recommendation or the suggestion that you have to hit it at exactly the right time, that is the key. Because what you have to understand is all the flowers on the tree are not maturing at the same time. So those products, and there's two. One's an injection and one's just a spray. But if it's a very large tree, then you wouldn't be able to spray it. So that's probably why he's suggesting the injection. You have to get your timing down. And that timing, you know, can be as little as 36 to 48 hours. So if you miss that window of opportunity, then you're still going to have some sweet gum flower and then fruit production. So you want to be reasonable with your expectations. You're not going to eliminate them, but you can reduce them if the injection is done at the proper time. And obviously that's going to be completely weather dependent. So nobody can tell you a date or anything like that because, you know, we can't see the future. So we don't know exactly.
Oh, it's really a shot in the dark.
I wouldn't say it's a shot in the dark. I mean, you're going to have some idea because we operate on something when we're talking about insect emergence and flower bud emergence. We calculate this actually based on something that's called degree days. And there's a very good map that shows us it takes so many hours of temperatures above 50 degrees, and then you'll get like different insects will emerge, different flower buds will start to bloom and things like that. So we have that pattern established. And so what a really good arborist will do is they'll look at those hours as they start to add up in the springtime. And when they hit, you know, a certain amount, then they know those flower buds on sweet gum are going to start to bloom. And so they can start to target those treatments then.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom, for the call. It is 314-436-7900. We will continue with your phone calls after a break for the news at the top of the hour. Mark Gruber is with us, community forester at the Missouri Department of Conservation. It's the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Today we have Mark Gruber, community forester from the Missouri Department of Conservation. We're talking a lot of trees. He's got the answers. You've got the questions. Let's get back to the phones. It's 314-436-7900. Waiting patiently is John. You're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, hi there. I live in a very forested area, you know, deer and all that. A couple years ago, I had a tree that was dying, and we had it taken down. Now, I have this beautiful green lawn, but I have no grass. It is moss. And when they took the tree down, there's a lot of damage, and moss apparently is pretty sensitive to traffic. And so I have a big dirt area there, and then between the deer when it rains, it got kind of muddy. Is there anything I can do to help reestablish that moss?
So how shady is that area now? Is it pretty exposed to sun?
It's pretty shady. I mean, I can't grow a coneflower or a marigold, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
Mosses do great.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if it stays shady and moisture is adequate, then the moss is going to come back on its own pretty easily. If, you know, if you're seeing through all the traffic that's occurred back there, you know, that the soil has started to pack down and things like that, then that might be your problem. So getting some organic matter in there, just get some shredded compost or just chop up the leaves and let them lay. That should help you.
All righty. I truly appreciate that. Sure. I will bust up the dirt a little bit, put in some organic material, and let nature take its course.
Yeah, just don't use a rototiller. You don't want to do anything like that. But if you just take even just like a gardening fork and poke some holes in the ground as you're putting the compost down, that'll be helpful.
Will do. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call, John. Up next, we have Gloria. Good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I misunderstood. I was trying to figure out what he was saying about those moles in your yard, because they really eat my yard up. I don't know if he said something about don't fertilize or something.
Yeah. So if you keep your lawn, you know, very moist, in other words, you irrigate or you run your sprinkler system quite a bit, and you use fertilizer, that is going to have a tendency to create a better habitat for moles, just because there tends to be more of the things that they like to eat. I'm not saying neglect your yard if that's something
I'm saying I have to fertilize my yard for the weeds for the summer and the winter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's just going to help. I mean, honestly, the best thing, I've talked to a lot of our wildlife biologists about this, the best thing to get rid of moles is going to be traps. And those scissor traps seem to be the ones that work pretty well. I mean, there's no foolproof thing, like there's no perfect mouse trap, but trapping is about the only way to effectively reduce your mole population.
But the moles are underground, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And so if these traps will actually, you put them in where you've seen them burrow out of the ground or where the traffic is, where you can tell the mole runs go consistently. And it's, you know, it's somewhat luck of the draw. That's why it's not perfect. But if you put them in where you see them travel the most frequently, you should get some pretty effective results.
Okay, one more question, a short question. I bought a greenhouse. What can I put in the greenhouse? I know I can put all vegetables. Can I put, like, my hibiscus, different plants that I want to come back?
I mean, some of it's going to depend on how that greenhouse is managed. So I wouldn't necessarily know that. But, yeah, if you can keep the temperature up warm enough so that things aren't going to freeze over the winter, then, yeah, anything that can tolerate some cool temperatures but not, you know, freezing cold temperatures, you should be fine and dandy in there.
So how do you keep it warm? You have to get a heater or something?
Yeah, you have to get some heaters or just see what the ambient heat is like. You know, some of them have pretty good panels, so when the sun shines through, they'll warm up pretty well, even to the point where sometimes you have to cool them because there's so much heat that builds up. Again, it just kind of depends on the greenhouse, so I'd have to know more specifics about your greenhouse.
Okay, so don't put it where a lot of sun is.
Well, you can. It's going to depend on what kind of plants you want to keep in there over the wintertime and how warm that system's going to get. Do you have some vents that you can open up to cool it off when it gets above a certain temperature? It depends on what type of greenhouse you have and what.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What some of the accessories with it.
I won't keep you too long because I know other people trying to get you. I got an idea of what you're saying. Thank you very much. You have a good day.
You're welcome.
You too, Gloria. Thanks for the question. Up next, we go to Shelley. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, good morning. I have two questions. We just took down a trampoline that's been up there for probably 8 years, and we have a zoysia yard. And I'm wondering, like, will that ever come back? Like, or will it just come back, like, as weeds?
Yeah, well, your zoysia is going to tend to be fairly aggressive where it has plenty of sun. And if it's, you know, if it stays shaded or there's an increasing amount of shade, zoysia won't tolerate that at all. So as long as you have those conditions, and again, it's not too packed down by all the feet that might have been traveling in that area to make use of the trampoline, then you should see the zoysia come back.
Okay, awesome. And then my other question is, each year I bring in my hibiscus plants, and sometimes they've done great, and sometimes they don't. And sometimes they've done great all winter, and then they die right before spring in the house. So I'm just wondering, like, is there something that I can do once they're in to increase my chances?
Plenty of sunlight. Keep them away from a direct vent. You don't want any type of that heat blowing on them constantly. And just making sure they get plenty of light and water them frequently. And the, you know, usually folks want like an every other day or every day or something like that. And I don't like rules of thumb like that, because every container, every soil situation is going to be a little different. So really the best thing to do is use your best drought monitor, which is your finger. You know, stick it in the dirt, and if it's dry, water. If it's not, don't. That's the best guidance I can give you on that.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Have a great day.
You too. Shelley, thanks for the call. The number is 314-436-7900. Mark Gruber, community forester, is answering your questions. We go next to Bob. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. And it sounds like you're just the perfect guy that I need to ask this question. We just took down a rather, well, it's about 40-some-year-old red oak tree, which was starting to really die off. So we've taken it down, but we do want to take and replace it with another, like a native tree.
Mm-hmm.
Question is that when's the best time to take and plant a tree? We went to a local nursery. They says they don't start digging their trees until almost towards the end of December in order to plant. In previous garden hotlines, they says, well, the fall is the best to take and put in because the ground's still warm. Some say it's the spring. So I'm in a quandary. What do you recommend?
Don't be in a quandary. Either fall or spring is going to be okay. Fall is the reason why people say fall is better for planting, and by that I'm talking about woody plants, so trees and shrubs, is because like the nursery person said, they typically do dig them in the fall. And again, those weather conditions are really going to impact when they do that digging. But the good part about planting in the fall is that as long as soil temperatures stay above about 40 degrees, you'll continue to get root growth, which is what you want, because you're going to lose some of the roots during the transplanting process. And if you plant in the springtime, that season's not quite as long before all of a sudden we start to get hot and dry. So those roots don't have as much time to be able to grow out and replace those that have been lost. If you do spring planting, you can get by with either. It's done successfully all the time, but fall will just give you a little bit extra bang for your buck, if you want to put it that way. The thing about replanting though is just make sure you don't try to put it in exactly the same spot. Even if you do have the stump ground out, you're probably going to have to move it a little ways, you know, one direction or the other to get that tree a good start.
How far away do you recommend from going from the stump? Because we're going to have the stump ground out. And like I said, this was a very large red oak.
Sure. Yeah. So again, some of it just depends on how big the thing actually is. So, you know, if you're really trying to go back to the exact same spot, you might try about 5 feet away. If you happen to know where the root flares are, and by that, you know, as the tree goes into the ground, you can see where those large roots start to go off. So try to pick.
This one's really fanned out. So, I know my wife, we have hostas around there, and when she was trying to plant that, and a lot of daffodil bulbs where we actually have around this oak tree, which is now gone, and we don't want to disturb those there. We still want to keep those, but you say about five, 6 feet or something, and also, when's basically my drop-dead date as far as in the fall, as far as planting?
There really isn't a drop dead date. As long as it stays relatively warm, you're okay to plant during the winter. It just, you know, you don't want to try to dig a hole when the ground's frozen, and you're not going to get good root growth. So I've planted trees in the winter and they've been just fine. But yeah, start about 5 feet away and just see if you can get them in between those roots without having to get saws out and things like that. If you're really running into a bunch of them, then move maybe another 3 to 5 feet out and try again, and you should be okay.
That sounds great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Bob, for your call at 314-436-7900. Mark will continue answering your questions after a short break. It's the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
KMOX, where every crack of the bat resonates with tradition, passion, and the spirit of Cardinals Nation.
It is the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Mark Gruber, Tree expert is here. Community forester answering your questions at 314-436-7900. Let's go to Lydia. You're up next.
Mark, hi. On previous visit to KMOX, you mentioned a tree, black oak. Could you tell me more about it? Does it go by another name? No one seems to have it. And where could I get one? Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, they are not the easiest to find in the nursery trade because they tend to be slower growing. They also have a taproot when they're young, which makes them a little bit more difficult to transplant. So you're probably looking at having to get a tree that's in a container. So you might try a container nursery. You can also go to the Missouri Botanical Garden. It has a native plant sale. I believe it's usually the first Saturday in May, but you can definitely confirm that on their website, and they would most likely have them there. Black oak is a really common species that grows in our woods. It likes drier sites, so you tend to find it up on tops of hills, ridge tops, or maybe down the side slope, up about the upper half of a slope. It tends to really grow well in the rocky soils of the Ozarks. So if you have a dry site in your yard that you're looking to fill with a very large shade tree because they can get pretty good sized, then a black oak's not a bad choice. Just like I said, understand that it's going to be difficult to find in the trade. There are definitely some nurseries around that carry them, but you're going to be looking at more of a specialty nursery. And like I said, one that grows stock that's in containers rather than wrapped in burlap.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lydia, for the call at 314-436-7900. We go now to Bertha. Good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. Two quick questions, I hope. I have maples that are, let's say, 15 years old. The roots that are 4 or 5 inches are running under my porch and under my driveway, heaving it up. Can I just cut the root near the porch or et cetera, and the tree will still be okay?
Not necessarily. That's a difficult one for me to answer just because I don't know the exact situation, how big the tree is, how far away that root is going to be cut. Cutting roots obviously is going to cut off a lot of what supports the tree. The other thing is if they're not cut cleanly, and even if they are, there's a chance that you can get decay in the root system then. And that's not something that you want because that's, can actually make the tree structurally unstable at some point in time. The issue is going to be with your pavement. The tree doesn't really want to grow under the pavement because roots need oxygen as much as they need moisture. So where they will tend to grow is along any seams or cracks that you have in your pavement. As far as the foundation is concerned, what they'll do is they'll grow alongside the foundation because that's where water and oxygen is. But if there's a crack in that foundation, then that's where the water's going to funnel and they will grow along that crack. They can't force their way through pavement, but they will take advantage of existing cracks and make them worse.
Are they growing under, like, if they can find a division in the pavement or that, are they growing under it? It's heaving it up.
Yes. They, like I said, they will wherever those seams are cracks in the pavement because that's where the water and oxygen is. That's definitely where they'll grow. And trees, depending on what type of maple, especially trees that are bottomland species, are going to have very vigorous root systems. They're going to send out a lot of roots. That's the way they are competitive where they like to grow. So if your soil's compacted, then they're going to be up near the surface because they need oxygen as well, which means they're going to grow, exactly where you don't want them to. So
I don't know about 15 foot from the concrete, I thought that was okay.
Again, not necessarily. I'd have to know how healthy your tree is and how big. My best recommendation would be to have an arborist come out and take a look at that site for you, and they can give you more exact recommendations than I can.
Thank you. The other question, quick, the lime hydrangea and crepe myrtle are about 6-8 feet tall. Can I cut those down? They're about 10 years old. Can I cut them down to about 3 feet?
Yeah, you should be able to with relatively little issue. The crepe myrtles, those are going to tend to die back when we get some colder temperatures anyway. And the hydrangeas will tend to do that too, depending on the species. I think you mentioned limelight. So, yeah, you can go ahead and cut them back and be
Oh, they're okay. Already looking dead. So I can cut them back to 3 feet and they'll come out?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the information.
Sure. Thanks for calling in, Bertha. We appreciate it. 314-436-7900. It is the Garden Hotline. Mark Gruber here answering your questions primarily about trees. He is a community forester with the State Department of Conservation, but he can address other topics as well. We will continue with your questions in just a moment.
Bernie Nicholas joins the Chris and Amy Show Tuesdays and Thursdays at 11:35 on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Like the Rolling Stones, we just keep going. Mark Gruber is here on the Garden Hotline to answer your questions at 314-436-7900. Mary, you are the next person to ask a question on the Garden Hotline.
Hello. Someone gave me a lavender plant. It's like a little tree-like. Do I have to take that in over the winter?
Yeah. It depends on the species of lavender, but none of them are going to be real cold hardy. So we get cold enough temperatures, and it can definitely freeze them back. So I would bring it in.
Okay. What about my roses? When do I cut them down?
You're okay to do that now. It's pretty warm. So you may not see a lot of dieback on them yet, but I think that we're going to see a pretty abrupt change from rather warm to rather cool. So I would say get out while the weather's nice and go ahead and take care of that now.
How do I cut them?
You can cut them back to about 6 inches or so.
Okay. All righty. That's my question. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mary. I wonder what Donna's question will be. She's next on the Garden Hotline. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning. I bought a Scarlet Fire dogwood tree this clearance end of the season. The tree was in really bad shape. It's a 7 foot tall. The leaves were half dry, brown, and a little green. The bracts are brown and dry looking, but I know below the bract that the stem is still green, and I know the tree is still alive. I put it in the ground. It seems to be hanging on. I just want to know what to use. Or first of all, should I prune off the bract or just leave it? And then I'm thinking it's going to make it through the winter. It seems like it's doing fine. Just want to know if and when to fertilize it, and then what to use for fertilizing.
Sure. So I'm going to make that last part real easy for you. Don't is the answer to fertilization. Yeah. The last thing that you want to do is encourage top growth, which is what most fertilizers are going to encourage when you want the root system replaced. The other thing that you have to understand is fertilizers, no matter if it's an organic or the more traditional type of fertilizer, it's made up of salts. And salts dry things out, right? So that typically means that you're going to have to be putting down some more moisture. So it's real simple with newly planted trees, especially those where, you know, you wanted to get a bargain, because I've done that many times myself. It's water. Make sure that tree is getting adequate water. Again, what is that? That just go out and test the soil. That's what I encourage you to do, rather than trying to go by some artificial schedule. Just test the soil, make sure it's moist enough. If it's not, water slowly and thoroughly. Don't do a lot of watering that doesn't last very long. It's much better for a tree to water for long periods of time and then mm-hmm. have an interval, 10 days to 2 weeks, something like that. Check it. If it's dry, mm-hmm. go ahead and mm-hmm. water again. Your pruning question, again, kind of the same thing. You want to leave it alone, because if you're pruning, even if you're just doing deadwood and things like that, you're creating a wound that the tree's going to have to put energy to react to. If your tree was stressed when you got it and put it in the ground, the whole idea is you want to minimize that stress as best you can. So don't create any further wounds. Don't put down any fertilizer. Just make sure that tree stays well watered, mulch it really well, and you should be just fine.
How often should I water it then throughout the winter?
Well, yeah, as long as we stay warm and dry, if we're not getting any kind of snowfall or any other precipitation, then you want to go ahead and especially if it's above freezing, put the hose out there. Again, I can give you that 10 days to 2 weeks to check it, but you really should be checking probably weekly and get your fingers dirty, get your hands in the dirt, dig a little hole, see if it's dry. Mm-hmm. If it isn't, go ahead and water.
Regarding the mulch, do you have a preference for the mulch? Does it have to be a certain kind of mulch?
No. No, just a good hardwood mulch. You definitely want to use some kind of material that's going to break down, because it's returning nutrients to the soil. So any kind of hardwood mulch, if you like pine bark or whatever, if something suits your aesthetics, that's fine. But just a good mulch, it's going to break down and put some of that organic matter back. And just real quickly, you want to mulch like a donut, not like a volcano, right? So you want to leave a little gap. You don't want to pile it up on the trunk. And you want to go out as far as you possibly can from the tree, as much area as you're willing to give up, because that makes the conditions more like the forest floor where trees come from. So they like that breakdown of that material. It helps them grow. It helps loosen up the soil and keep it moist.
One quick question. The tree at the trunk at the base there, at the ground, does have suckers coming out. And I'm not going to touch those, but in the future, should I or would I want to do that?
Yeah, some of that's going to depend on your pruning aesthetics. Like, do you want a single stem tree versus more of a shrubby look to it? Those suckers or water sprouts are probably because the tree was a little stressed. So yeah, you're right. Go ahead and leave them on there for now. But maybe at the end of next season, if your tree looks like it's really started to establish itself and is growing well, then you can prune those off. Just don't be surprised if you have to do that for a few years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much. You answered all my questions. I love it. Thank you.
Great. Answered all the questions there, Mark. Perfect. Up next, we have Mark on with Mark. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Mark.
I'm calling about a Japanese maple tree that I have. It's about 20 years old. Planted it roughly about 12 feet away from the house, and it's gotten a little taller than I anticipated it to be. It's kind of canopy starting to get over to the gutters and a little bit over the roof of the house. Mm-hmm. I was looking at trimming it back, and I was wondering, when's the best time to trim it, and how far back can I safely trim it?
Yeah, so a couple of things. During the dead of winter is really the best time to do your pruning, because that's when decay fungi aren't active, and it gives the tree the longest period of time to go ahead and try to deal with that wound. And seal it to try to keep decay organisms out. As far as how far you want to prune back, it's really kind of difficult to say without actually seeing the tree. You always want to prune back to what we call a lateral or to the trunk. You don't want to make what we call an internodal cut. And so that would mean, like, if you're talking about a small twig, anywhere in between the buds, or anywhere just indiscriminately in the middle of a branch. You always want to cut where one branch is forking off from another at something that we call the branch collar. I know that's starting to sound really technical and complicated. If you go to our website, mdc.mo.gov, we have really good pruning information there with diagrams showing you where all those things are. But just understand, once you start to try to control or attempt to control the height of the tree, you're going to be doing that for the rest of that tree's life. So you might want to look at doing something that we call subordination or redirection pruning. So when you're cutting a limb back, cut it back to a limb that's growing in the direction that you're okay with, that doesn't put it back over the top of the house or into the gutters or what have you, if that makes sense. So if you've got a branch growing up and it's starting to go over the house, but you've got one that's going to the right or the left, that's in a direction maybe along the house, that's not going to cause you a problem, then you cut that limb back to there, and that's going to take over and start to grow in the direction that you're okay with. Just keep in mind that, you know, new buds are going to form as the branch grows and start to grow in a direction that you don't want. So that's something that once you commit to it, you're going to have to do that probably annually for the rest of that tree's life.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the question. Up next, let's go to Alan. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Hello. I wanted to see about planting persimmon trees and where I could get them, or do I need to grow them from seed?
Growing them from seeds actually fairly easy. That's how I got a persimmon tree in my backyard growing up, is I convinced my mom to throw persimmon seeds out onto the ground and had some babies. They will actually grow up relatively easy from that. You can find them in the nursery trade. It's very similar to the black oak that we were talking about earlier, though, is persimmons, when they're young, have a taproot, and so they're difficult to transplant. And so you're going to have to find one that's grown in a container, and those are going to be probably at more of your specialty types of nurseries. So you'll have to call around or do a little internet research, but there are definitely local nurseries that carry persimmons. There are, you'll find some that are our Missouri native persimmon, and then you'll find some also that are what we call improved cultivars. So they may be hybrids between our native persimmon and persimmons from another part of the world. You know, it just depends on whether you want a true native Missouri persimmon or not. The other thing that you have to keep in mind with persimmon, there are separately sexed male and females. So the females are ones that have the fruit. The males do the fertilizing and help the females form that fruit. So you may have to get a couple. But again, that depends on whether you're going to go with the Missouri native persimmon or actually buy one of the improved cultivars. Usually the cultivars, you'll be able to tell whether it's a male or female. It'll say on the tag.
And what's the best growing conditions for persimmon trees?
I'm laughing because persimmons are pretty tolerant. They'll grow almost anywhere from very wet to very dry. So just make sure you're giving it a lot of sun because they do like a good amount of sunlight. You know, the better your soil conditions are, the better growth that you're going to get out of the persimmon. But they're pretty amazingly tolerant trees.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling in, 314-436-7900. It is the Garden Hotline. We're going to continue in just a moment with your phone calls for Mark Gruber, Community Forester with the State Department of Conservation. Stay tuned.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We're back with Mark Gruber, Community Forester, answering your questions this morning. Let's get back to the phones. Diane, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning, Mark. Diane here, and I am trying to transplant some peonies and hydrangeas from Illinois back into Missouri. And I have them dug up. Do I put them in a pot until spring, or can I plant them now?
Yeah, you'll want to get them in the ground as soon as you can. The longer you keep them, you know, in a pot or dug and sitting on the ground or healed in or something like that, the more likely you are to have some sort of issue with it.
Okay.
So especially while we're still warm, it's best to go ahead and find the site where you want to put them and get them in the ground now. Just like we've been saying, make sure you're watering them well after you get them in the ground.
Okay. And for the peonies, they are sun lovers, correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. And the hyacinth, hydrangea, it depends on the type of hydrangea?
It does. Most of them, it seems like, do a little bit better with kind of a partial shade type of thing.
Okay.
Flowering's always going to be better with full sun, but that can put them under a little bit of stress depending on the kind that you have.
All right. Super. Thanks for your help.
You're welcome.
Have a great day.
Thanks for calling in, Diane. We appreciate it. Up next, let's go to Gwen. You are on the Garden Hotline with Mark.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have around 30 arborvitaes in a row, and they're doing very well. But with it being so dry, should I continue to be watering them? They're about 10 to 12 foot high.
Absolutely, yeah. Arborvitaes tend to struggle in our climate long-term just because we do have these extended dry periods and they don't tolerate that very well. So, yeah, keep watering. Again, just you'll need to go out there and monitor what the soil conditions are. Probably look at them, every week, but give them a slow, thorough soaking. Water them for long extended periods of time and then have a gap, let that soil dry out some, and then when it starts to get to the point where it's pretty dry, then go ahead and water again. So typically, 10 days to 2 weeks this time of year, but nothing beats going out and monitoring those soil conditions.
Great. Okay, and another thing, my husband thinks that, I guess both of us think that we should keep mulch under it or grass clippings and stuff to hold water in. Is that a good idea, or is it better just to have just the normal droppings from the trees, the trees themselves?
Yeah, either one is fine, actually. The point is that you want to have some organic matter, which is mulch. Can be grass clippings, can be a hardwood mulch, can be what falls off the trees naturally. But anything covering up that ground is going to be more like the forest floor conditions where trees naturally grow. So there's leaves and decaying twigs and bark and things like that. So any of that material, as long as you don't pile it up along the trunk, no more than 2 to 3 inches deep, and as far out from the tree as you're willing to go, is going to provide you better soil conditions.
Oh, okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's been calls about the hydrangeas, but I haven't been on here for long this morning. We cut them back pretty far, but I don't know if that was such a good idea because the blooms were huge. I've never seen hydrangeas so huge. And with the weight of them, then they obviously fell to the ground.
Yeah,
and
flopped over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I really didn't want that to happen.
Yeah.
So is that because we cut them so low?
It's kind of hard to say. There could be a lot of things that can cause that. So if you're fertilizing...
Limelight hydrangeas,
okay.
I should have said that.
So. Yeah, well, if you're fertilizing, then that can do it as well because that promotes top growth and not a lot of structural integrity. So you can get the plants flopping over from that. But I doubt it's from how far you cut them back. They're just those new sprouts are going to be vigorous and grow up fairly quickly because that plant wants to get that leaf surface back out there, right, to create energy for itself. So that too can sometimes cause you to have to do some staking on them.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I appreciate your help. Thank
mm-hmm.
you so
You're
much.
Welcome.
All right. We've got a couple more minutes left in the program. Mary, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello there. Real quickly, a question about a dwarf lilac bush shrub. My local nursery said they've already cut theirs down to it's basically a bulb of root, a root bulb. Mm-hmm. Is that a good time to buy them, or should I wait till next spring and just until it comes back? And I mean, bought one.
Yeah, you can go ahead and purchase them that way. They're gonna resprout. If it's in a container, you can pop them out of container and just make sure the roots aren't growing in a circle or the root ball hasn't dried out too much, but you should see some healthy roots in there, which, usually have kind of a whitish green color. And as long as you see that, then you know that the top of the plant is going to be in good shape. And you can go ahead and plant that, and it's going to pop out of the ground just fine in the springtime.
Lower though than if I buy one that's already in the spring, already looking like a bush.
You're going to have the same result because they're just going to be doing the same thing you are, right? Which is waiting for springtime for that plant to come out. So if that makes you more comfortable to be able to see it after it's sprouted out, then wait until spring. But fall is a better time for planting,
right?
Just because you get that root growth while it's still warm.
I just have never purchased a root ball. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling in to the Garden Hotline on this beautiful October Saturday. Mark, thank you once again for coming in and doing a great job of answering people's questions.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hope to have you back soon.
Absolutely. I'd love to be here.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.